Good morning and welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse and we are live on the Radio Colorado Network. Good morning, the world. And we have great news for you today. The elimination of waste is one thing, but to convert it into an asset for humankind is a distinct phenomenon. There's a difference between a solution and a global systemic solution. Global systemic solutions are human imperatives that have an invisible window of time in which to act. And when they are not acted upon by a certain time, large-scale ramifications occur, like decay, destruction, and degeneration. But the good news of today, ladies and gentlemen, is that we have somebody here in the studio who is the founder and chairman of StarTech Environmental Corporation. He has brought through a solution that will not only eliminate waste, but convert it to an asset for humankind. Please join me in welcoming the chairman, Joe Longo, to It's Rainmaking Time. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kim. It's kind of you to have me this morning.
Well, I've been working on a global systemic solution myself for 14 years. I'm very familiar with the complexity of it and the contribution of it, but I have not been quite as excited except to hear about the solution that you've already brought into the world. So let's talk about what are you doing in the elimination of waste, and what does that mean that you can eliminate waste and convert it to an asset for humankind?
Well, Kim, what we actually do is to take waste, all waste, and irreversibly destroy it, and that's terribly important, particularly with regard to hazardous and lethal materials. But in the process of irreversibly destroying, completely and irreversibly destroying the waste, we're able to convert it into a useful commodity product, principally a gas mixture that's very rich in hydrogen. And there's also some solids. We can recover metals and silicates and things of that sort. But our business is essentially focused on irreversibly destroying the troublesome materials as far safer than the prevailing environmental standards, and then converting them into materials. And you'll find I'm a little long-winded on short questions sometimes give rise to long answers, but it also makes money for the users. And in this world driven by numbers in economy, if it didn't make money for the users and save money, et cetera, it really wouldn't even be a commercial product. It would just be
an interesting technical capability. Well, look, you have built a plasma converter, which, to my understanding from reading your material, is able to take the molecular structure and break apart the bond so that the danger is not there. Could you just explain the essence so that people who are listening can get the essence of what is occurring that's so incredible?
Yes, and if I may use some goofy analogies, I hope your audience will forgive me.
We like goofy here.
Okay, goofy's good as far as I'm concerned.
I like Tweety Bird, too, but you can go ahead with the goofy.
Well, you know, I kidded with someone. If I could have learned quantum mechanics with a pop-open Big Bird book, sniff and smell, or scratch and smell, that would be good for me. As a matter of fact, on that subject, I'll explain the technology a bit in a moment, but one of the interesting barriers and life experience is that the fact that it was a new idea, or it is a new idea, has really had to go through a minefield. Now I'm using an analogy with Bob Boyer as well. There are lots of folks in the world who, while they say, yes, we like new ideas can sometimes make people very uncomfortable. So we've had to go through, and while I'm using the silliness of these Big Bird analogies, we have had to not only do the technical and commercial development, but part of that was to do the education process on the way, because on the face of it, it sounds too good to be true. And once in a while, there are some things that are too good to be true. And if this sounds like magic, it ain't. It's just good core technology. And I say to people sometime in my office, if you want to talk about magic, I'll point down to that plug in the wall with those teeny little slots, and electrons come out of that, and can drive all sorts of things. Now, that's magic to me.
Yes.
But back again, what the process does is impinge. There's an arc of electricity, a lightning-like arc of electricity in the vessel.
What vessel are you talking about? Can we go back to one thing real quick? I just want to bring you back for audiences. The part, and then I want you to finish. The part about the molecular bonds.
Yes.
And your plasma converter. I think if we could start with something that people can get on a basic scientific level, and then you come in with that, please.
What we do is we have a device in the vessel that produces an incredible amount of energy, radiant energy, that impinges, attacks, bears down on any of the material that comes into the vessel. And all of those materials are essentially, for the most part, molecular constructions, most of which are man-made. And it breaks those bonds apart because the bonds cannot sustain, they can't hold hands in the face of this enormous bit of energy pushing down on them, the so-called flux. And the bonds break apart. And so that while you could have a thing called cyanide made of carbon and nitrogen, we'll break that apart, and then we get a carbon and a nitrogen, both of which are relatively benign, as a matter of fact, both of which are necessary for life itself. So we break apart the bonds by exposing it to an intense field of radiant energy, and that's not atomic radiation or anything like that.
Is that heat energy?
Well, the answer is yes, and I'm really going to be, you know, the goofy scientist. When you're on a beach or up on the slopes in Aspen or wherever, and you're sitting sunning yourself, you get hot. And what happens is it's the transfer of radiant energy from the sun impinging on your skin that produces a sensation of heat. It does a lot of other chemical things as well. So the transfer of energy, the derivative, one of our perceptions of the transfer of energy has to do with heat. So, yeah, it's heat, but it's really the transfer of energy. I don't know if that makes any sense.
A little bit.
But let me try one more thing, if I may. I'm going to take you back to Aspen. After a ski day, you're sitting on the rug in front of the fireplace on the floor, and it's nice and toasty. You're getting warmed by your absorption of radiant energy. The hot gases are going up the flue, and you're not touching the anvil because that will burn your hand. But if you sit behind the sofa, it's quite cold back there because there's a barrier between you and the radiant energy,
okay.
And that's the sofa.
Okay.
Something like that.
But the bottom line for the public, though, is that there's something that your plasma converter does that breaks apart and breaks down the problem in the molecular structure that causes the problem, that causes the danger, that causes the toxicity.
Yes.
And gets rid of that and makes it inert. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And that's by breaking those bonds apart, what looks like a Frankenstein creature, a toxic material, might be a molecule made of a chlorine, a carbon, et cetera, fundamental elements, I mean.
Okay.
When they break apart, it's no longer the Frankenstein creature.
Very good. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you are tuning into It's Rainmaking Time. We are live on the Radio Colorado Network. We are up as well on a satellite, which we're delighted today. We're also streaming live on the Internet on Warp Radio. Thank you, Warp. And we're here with Joe Longo, who's the chairman of StarTech, a company that is not only have an ability to eliminate waste, but to convert it to an asset for humankind. So, Joe, we are about getting rid of electronics or computers or equipment, toxic chemicals and pollutants that we don't need. What about, will this technology get rid of uranium or chemical weapons? Can you talk about that?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I note that you're calling from Colorado, and we have done lots of work on chemical weapons and munitions. We'll talk about radioactive waste in a moment, but not too far from Denver is a city called Pueblo, and Pueblo has a serious chemical weapons depot there that we've talked to Pueblo about using the process to irreversibly destroy those materials as compared to incinerating them, which was a dreadful process. So, yes, they will destroy the chemical weapons, as a matter of fact, again, because we're ripping the molecules apart, and ripping the molecule apart comprised of the fundamental elements, indeed will destroy that irreversibly. As a matter of fact, When I say irreversibly, that's where it comes from, because particularly in chemical weapons, one can destroy the chemical weapon. Now, what would that be? It would be a thing called VX or GB or sarin, or it might be mustard gas or things of that, dreadful things of that sort, the things that we wish now we could disinvent, but we can't. And it is important when they're destroyed that there can't be any parts, there can't be any Humpty Dumpty that can possibly be put back together, even though it might be less troublesome. As a matter of fact, my pals in the Army, you know, I'm going to get in trouble with them, but they'll say the good news is the incineration will destroy the lethal materials and as a result will produce hazardous materials. Now, that to some might look like progress, but we can that for another time.
Let me ask you this. You know, Dr. Yunus, who invented the Grameen Bank, and which has been running for 25 years and making money, and he built it on a different premise than the banking system, which is that he built it based on trust and based on the concept of credit as a human right, and that payback has nothing to do with collateral. So in my interview with him back in December, I had asked him about the tremendous resistance, because he put together a global systemic solution in the area of the credit world, and it works. And he shared about the tremendous types of resistance. I am sure you also are encountering, have encountered, and will encounter great resistance, in part due to, you know, things have always been done a particular way. We've always incinerated, or we've always dumped waste, you know, at point A or point B. But also that there is geopolitics involved, and there are, let's say, pre-existing contracts from one company or one big contract to lug X amount of waste from point A to point B on certain days at certain times in certain places. And how do you interface with that in the face of what you have right now? How are you dealing with that, or how do you plan to deal with that?
You hit the nail right on the head, or the two nails on the head, and that is, we would be considered, as would the gentleman you just told me about, in marketing parlance, the disruptive technology. And the disruptive technology disrupts the sustaining technology. It's MBA talk, but it means that the new technologies often are terribly upsetting to the old technologies, and by that, the old technologies that we're facing, we're doing too generous to call incineration and dumping stuff in a hole in the ground a technology. But in the United States, there are many places that still use those two techniques. And by and large, when we talk to those folks, they know it's not quite right, but after all, you know, they don't want to have to make the change yet. On the other hand, there are many, many communities around the world, and many of which are so-called third world countries, who have not made a commitment into dumps and or have no capability at all, even incineration. And we have a much easier time there.
I just want to say this to you, that we're gonna go to a commercial in about 2 minutes, but I want to tell you that, as far as I'm concerned, somebody who's been working on a global systemic solution for 14 years myself on a completely separate level, I know for a fact that those agencies, institutions, organizations, and groups of people that are invested in, let's say, earlier ways and means or earlier technologies or methods that are not collectively at the highest level contributing, or that they are detracting from the environment, the well-being of humanity, they have always an opportunity to be part of the new and next generation solution. And while the introduction of, let's say, something that you've already put into being that's now working and available, let's say already in the countries of Japan, Poland, Rome, the Department of Energy, other people and agencies and groups have an opportunity. The window is now to get on board, you know, with what's already here, because what's here isn't going away. You know, it's like we had there was a book called The Marketing Imagination, and in it they were talking to the railroads at the time when other transportation aspects were needed. And they said, what business are you in? And they said, we're in the railroad business. And they were so in the railroad business that when other methods of transportation became available and they had an opportunity to get involved, they couldn't see it because it was like the hammer to the nail. Yeah. The hammer only saw the nail. But in fact, had they viewed themselves, understood themselves in a larger context, they would have been ready and ripe to be on board with other forms of transportation. And with that said, Joe Longo, please stand by because we are going to go to a commercial and bring on the line one of the owners of the Whole Life Pages. Whole Life Pages has been 7 years in business, is a directory and publication that is distributed into three states, Texas, Colorado, and Arizona. They produce approximately 150,000 directories. They have a debt-free company, a staff of 20 people, and we're bringing Carmen Lamarco on today to It's Rainmaking Time. Good morning.
Good morning, Kim.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I understand you and your husband are looking for a $150,000 business loan to grow your business to a totally different level. And, you know, after what I said about Dr. Muhammad Yunus and how he built this business, it's obvious now that the need for collateral, if people pay attention, should not be a precursor for loaning or investing money, but it's a mindset. But there are many people in many states around America who do have $150,000 that they want to invest and would like to get involved in an already existing concern like yours. And I'd like you to share a little bit about your background with the audiences who are listening.
Well, I've personally been in the directory advertising and publishing industry for nearly 20 years as a publisher for about 12. I previously published Yellow Pages directories, the actual at-your-door types of phone books in a market in Texas for 5 years and published five directories each year. Moved to Arizona and began with a dear friend the process of filling a need where there was no resource to help people find natural, holistic, and alternative resources because of his personal need, having been diagnosed with cancer. There was nothing available, and the idea came about to publish a phone book because there were so many resources here in Arizona at the time, and we had no way of finding them. So we spent our entire year digging up and looking for, by referral primarily, the best of the best in any type of natural alternative resource. And we have now been successfully publishing Whole Life Pages in Arizona for 7 years. And we've become the who's who and what's what. And there are so many markets out there that have available in their areas fantastic practitioners and these kinds of resources, and they have no product, no publication that puts it all into their hands. We're the only directory of its kind in the country. And we've become quite a model. We get calls regularly from other markets. Can you please come here and publish your directory? When are you going to be in this state? When are you going to be in this state? So we are currently at a point where we're doing very, very well with our three directories and our three markets. And we're actually, if you combine all three markets, we're publishing nearly 200,000 copies of our directories. And they're free. We don't sell them. We want people to have access to these resources so they can change their lives.
Carmen, how do people get a hold of you who are interested?
We have a toll-free number, which is 877-234-5144. There is a PIN number. It asks for a PIN number or access code, which is 6519. But they can also drop me an email.
How do they reach you on the Internet?
They can go to wholelifepages.com, W-H-O-L-E-L-I-F-E, pages, P-A-G-E-S.com, and find our Internet edition of Whole Life Pages there as well.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. And ladies and gentlemen, please look at wholelifepages.com. Give Carmen a call and get involved in the high growth of their business and take it throughout the United States. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuning in to It's Rainmaking Time. We are here live with Joe Longo, the founder of the StarTech Environmental Corporation, who is rocking the planet with their new waste elimination and conversion technology that can get rid of pretty much any type of toxic chemicals waste on the planet. Bar none, am I correct on the bar none part, Joe?
Bar none. The plasma converter, quite honestly, doesn't very much care if we happen to call something hazardous waste or not hazardous waste. It's going to rip the molecules apart, whatever it is.
Okay. Talk to us, if you would, about the work with Japan, Poland, Rome, Department of Energy, or any one of them. And can you talk a little bit about some of the engagements that are going on or what different countries are looking at or evaluating for themselves now with regard to bringing this technology in?
Yes, there are many, many countries all over the world, including many states in the United States. But and some of those things, some of the things in the United States are in development. And since we're a public company, I have to be careful about disclosing what would be considered tradable material. But I'll talk to you about what we have disclosed. We have a system in Japan producing, processing hazardous waste incinerator ash and PCBs. And PCBs are dreadful materials that get absorbed in industrial materials, get absorbed in fatty tissue. As a matter of fact, it gets concentrated in a woman's breast and in breast milk. And I thought, my God, you know, the madness, that devilish event. In any event, we're destroying those materials. And we have, in Italy, we have a contract for a system to destroy e-waste, and that's electronic waste. 5 or 6 years ago, or 8 years ago, the term wasn't even in the vernacular, but now with the enormous amount of electronic material being discarded, it's accumulating, has to be destroyed. There are lots of toxic materials in them. They're also going to be doing asbestos in Poland. There's a variety of industrial chemicals that are going to be destroyed there, petrochemical hazardous waste materials, and also municipal solid waste. And by the way, if I may, the guys, the fellows who are, by virtue of their commercial enterprising, produce as a derivative a hazardous waste material, doesn't mean they're bad people. I mean, the very things that we can't live without sometimes have derivative materials that in another situation are harmful to us unless they're managed well. So the hazardous materials are not being produced by devils. Thank God we have the modernity delivering all these wonderful things to us. But we are at the back end. What we can do is, a matter of fact, to a DuPont who is producing among many thousands, we can take that material and, in a manner of speaking, give them a death certificate for the material. It says that you give us that material and we'll completely and irreversibly destroy it, so you never, ever have to worry again about this appearing in some landfill or in some third world country. It's gone forever. The term we use is a death certificate because of the finality to that.
I kind of like that. So, you know, so the only thing you need now is like a funeral service. Yes, to complete the ceremony.
We call it Digger Joe Longo, the undertaker, you know, whatever. We can take that in a lot of different directions.
You know, maybe Schwarzenegger would love you. I don't know. You know,
well,
he's like the, what, Terminator? This is the perfect Terminator concept.
We're talking to him.
Yeah, he needs the termination technology.
Yes.
But the thing is that, really, I was thinking about this last night. You have actually produced something that creates a utility.
We do, and I have to tell you, your listeners will say, boy, that Longo's a real smart guy. He ain't a real smart guy. I'm using New York vernacular with the vulgarity of the ain't, you know...
You mean they won't say that Kim is a really smart gal?
Well,
now I'm jealous.
So
we're going to get in a big fight, Joe.
But certainly Kim is smart, but Joe is not. Because what happened, we started out in the process of destroying. We were a waste industry company for 35 years. So we were doing product developments with regard to destruction of waste. It was never our intention or ever even thought about having derivative products. Like so much technology, one thing leads to another. And we had enough sense to harness it and help turn it into a commercial advantage. And hence, now, We have, for example, our contracts with Department of Energy. Their initiative with us is to have us demonstrate to them what they already know, and that is to be able to produce hydrogen from a variety of different kinds of waste, including municipal solid waste, for the hydrogen economy. We're addicted to oil, et cetera, as I know you know, 20 million barrels a day. So one of the things that can be extracted from what we produce is a source of manufactured gas, very rich in hydrogen, therefore leading to the hydrogen economy. And as a matter of fact, Schwarzenegger's administration is extremely interested in the hydrogen aspect of the plasma converter system.
When I was reading about StarTech, in some of the information on the site, there was one article that said that it's wonderful, and yet it's expensive. Is that true? Is that a distortion, or is it only expensive because it appears to be because it's new technology, and it's a new process, and it's a new paradigm within an industry that hasn't necessarily been prepared for it?
It's exactly what you've said. If we talk to someone and he says, well, what does this thing cost? If he says, because I'm evaluating it as compared to our dump, I'm saying, you know, we can't compete with a hole in the ground. You keep filling up the hole in the ground, and when you've corrupted the environment enough and they throw you out of office, give us a call and we'll come and take care of that. For example, New York City has made the determination about 6 months ago that it will never again incinerate or landfill waste. In the meantime, what it's doing is sending it out to some other states who are saying, hey, send us your garbage. It's okay with us. But we're talking about to New York City about putting in plasma converters for them for their 25,000 tons per day. But back to the money issue. The equipment, if you take a look at the life of the equipment depreciation, it'll cost about 2 cents a pound, which is really peanuts in terms of so many things. There's a lot of people who have, some half-witted knowledge about what they think they read someplace else.
Right.
And there's a lot of one person repeating another. And what we do, when we speak to a potential customer, we speak to him in two terms, in terms of his profit and loss statement, or his cash flow, or his budget, or his finances. And if somehow the numbers don't meet his financial objectives, then he's not a customer. But it is about the money. And our shareholders, I'm carrying on, our shareholders, we're a public company, and our shareholders invest in us because they do want to make money by share price appreciation, but they also, almost to the person, they're doing it because they feel good about participating in a company that, you know, is going to help protect the public health and safety and protect the babies, as a matter of fact. And so we have a lot of those sentiments as well.
You know, when you were talking about, let's say, New York, which has agreed to, you know, not dump the waste in the state, and then you find out that it's being transported to other states, to me, on a systemic level, there needs to be legislation, new legislation that has to do with covering. And first of all, I think you have to be able to, on a completely separate level, Joe, you have to be able to track and have people accountable for what waste is there, what's the nature of it, where is it going. And I think there needs to be public accountability so that the public knows. Like, if you're in Connecticut, you should know as a citizen where is what kind of waste and where is waste dumped, incinerated, or turned into in your state. And if that were to happen, if somebody were to be willing to put that together and create a mandate for that, first of all, we could get in front of where is it going, what is there, and it doesn't happen insidiously and imperceptibly every day.
Yes.
Where the bottom line is, if there's an earthquake in the wrong area and there's uranium dumped there, sorry.
Yes.
You know, goodbye to that state. It's into the air. It's into the water. It's into the ground. And it's too late. So this, to me, what you're doing is marvelous. And it's a race against time. It's really a race against time. I'd like to open up the lines for call-ins right now. And I like the people that are listening, wherever you are, if you're on the internet, if you're listening to us on satellite, to It's Rainmaking Time, please call us at 1-800-531-3815. We are live on the Radio Colorado Network. We're also on satellite and on the internet. We'd like to hear from you and address your questions or comments to Joe Longo, the chairman of the StarTech Environmental Corporation, at 1-800-531-3815. I'm going to give that number out one more time because three's the charm. Somebody better get to your phone. At 1-800-531-3815. And while people are making their decision whether they should dare call or not, I'd like to continue with you. You were talking, Joe, about radioactive material earlier. Was there something you... Did you finish that part about radioactive material?
No, as a matter of fact, you hit a couple of terribly important items, Kim, and the... You know, this accountability, there'll be a phrase that comes into the vernacular, in a common vernacular, and that is the chain of custody. States need to be self-sufficient. And if you're out at Yucca Mountain, the folks in Nevada are not saying, hey, bring all your bad stuff to us, because what the heck, we don't count that much. Every state needs to be self-sufficient. And now I'm going to give you an image of, we've talked to the regulatory agency about the dirty bomb. If someone wanted to do a dirty bomb, all they would have to do is intercept a truck, not with highly radioactive uranium fuel rods or something, but simply low-level radioactive waste. What would be a low-level radioactive waste? God forbid someone should be in a hospital that suspects a tumor of some sort. That what they'll do is inject the individual with some material, a lovely euphemism called scintillating material. I mean, it sounds like, you know, something, a nice perfume or something.
It does sound nice, doesn't it?
And what it does, it's radioactive and lights up the tumor. But that's low-level radioactive material. It dissolves, it dissipates in the body in several days. But things like that are being transshipped across the country in the dark of night, not that sinister, but going across the country. And picture the following. Yes, it's going across state lines, but it's going through past the nursing home and the schoolyard and et cetera. It's going through neighborhoods. And if someone went to intercept one of those, grab some of the radioactive junk and put it in an explosive and blow it up, it wouldn't even have to be that effective. Just the idea of it happening would shut down a city. And, I mean, we're doing goofy things under the suggestion, you know, I'll start eating my vegetables tomorrow. I'll go on a diet tomorrow, or it hasn't happened to me now, but et cetera. You know, the U.S., we in the United States live our lives full up, but we have to rely on others to help to protect us. And those disciplines you talked about, Kim, they will happen because I hope it doesn't take an event to get people focused on it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuning into It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. We are live with Joe Longo, who's the chairman of the StarTech Environmental Corporation, who is bringing truly a revolution in the waste elimination industry, but has turned really waste into a usable utility for humanity. And we want to bring back the subject that you talked about on the phone to me, Joe, about the distinction between lethal and
hazardous. Yeah.
Hazardous. Talk about those two, because I hear them the same.
I know.
I'm sure most of us hear them as the same thing, but they're not. What's the difference?
And permit me to use a little of the, speak in the New York City vernacular, if you will, please. Well, and it's reasonable. You know, they sort of sound like synonyms, but they ain't. Lethal will kill you right away. Hazardous will harm you and may very well kill you and or person. For example, chemical weapons are lethal, and they're a world of hazardous materials. I love chocolate. My dog Kip also loves chocolate, but if I give Kip too much chocolate, I'll do Kip a lot of harm. So with regard to Kip and Kip's universe, chocolate is a hazardous material. And so you get the idea, but there is a heck of a difference between lethal and hazardous, and we're surrounded with hazardous materials. The lethals are sort of gathered up for the most part, and back again in Colorado, a little bit south of Denver, is Puebla, and that's a chemical weapons depot, and by golly, that's lethal material. And one of the things they worry about there is a wonderful euphemism called auto-detonation, which is to say maybe these things will go off by themselves because they've been there for years and years. And when those things were invented, there was a good purpose, I guess, at the time. It was never contemplated. Your audience is going to love this because it tickles me in a perverse way. When it was invented, they never thought about disinventing them. By that, they never thought about what happens if we don't use them. They were designed to be used, and that was it. But now that they're not used, now we have an interesting problem.
It's like a half-baked idea. It is not completed in its formulation. Its ramifications are not completed.
Sure.
It's half-baked.
Or maybe even, Kim, it's inconvenient. You know, we know a lot about ideas that are inconvenient will get pushed aside, deniability, things of that sort.
Yes. We're going to move to a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with Joe Longo from the StarTech Environmental Corporation. Ladies and gentlemen, when I think of the woman I'm about to introduce to you, I chuckle, I laugh, I have a smile on my face because she definitely carries the magic. She is an example of rainmaking. She is a producer, director, and actress who has just completed a film called Baby, It's Cold Outside. Please welcome Pam Ross to It's Rainmaking Time. Good morning.
Hi, Kim.
Thank you for being here. I had to invite you on the show today because I'm very proud of the work that you've done, and I know that we're not in the Christmas time of season, but I know that Christmas time is coming up, and I think that the world needs to hear about a new movie that has lightness and levity and heart and sweetness and fun that's both available to children and adults and families. And I just thought you'd share a little bit about Baby, It's Cold Outside and tell the world what this film's about and why they should come see it and buy it on DVD.
Okay. Well, it's a romantic comedy. It's great work like Joe Longo's doing, but hopefully it makes people laugh.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. I understand that there's an animal involved in this, an anteater.
Yeah. Well, the movie is basically about a woman from South Florida that meets and marries a man from northern Maine in the middle of winter, hence the title, Baby, It's Cold Outside. And there's also a little subplot about this anteater animal that had gotten transferred up to Maine to be part of a petting zoo. And we learn that he's a tropical mammal and just cannot survive in a northern climate. And he has to be returned to the tropics. And there's a little correlation between her and what will happen to her because she's not faring too well in this cold weather environment. And hopefully it has a lot of laughs. And the best part is it's has wide audience appeal. I think it's a good movie for anybody who hates winter, anybody whose parents moved to Florida years ago to get out of the snow. Snowbirds relate to it. And animal lovers love it because of this cute little anteater that runs around the movie a lot.
Can you tell people how to get a hold of the DVD right now? It's available on DVD. It's actually out first on DVD, and then it's coming out in the movie. So we're doing it a little bit backwards, aren't we, right now, Pam?
Well, when you have an independent, you're allowed to do that. anybody can log on to www.babyitscoldoutside.net. www.babyitscoldoutside.net. You can order a DVD through there, but mostly what I'm trying to do is you call me the rainmaker that I get things done.
Yes.
The movie's done. It was written, financed, produced, edited. It's completely 100% done and ready, but now what I'm trying to do is sell it and, I guess, get the advertising out there. I mean, people can't buy a movie that they never heard of. They don't know about it.
Well, thank you for being here, and congratulations for a completed work and effort, for raising all the money to do it, to handling all the aspects of it. I think we need to applaud a lot of the people that are able to do that today and inspire the next step. And our blessings and well wishes are with you, and thanks for being here, Pam.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kim.
Bye-bye. You are tuning into It's Rainmaking Time. We're back with Joe Longo with the StarTech Environmental Corporation, bringing us the elimination of waste and a new utility for humankind.
I smiled when I listened to Pam, and it brightened me. a bit because, and I'm going to tell you now something that is really going to sound, you folks are going to think this is Uncle Fluffy talking now, but when
you
I speak to the
You should be at Disney
kids,
with me, Uncle Fluffy.
I speak to the children a lot, and especially if I get them, 5 to 12 years old, I'll start by saying, I'm the Lorax, and I speak for the trees. Now, they understand it. Sometimes the teachers don't know what the heck. Who is this guy? But the kids from Dr. Seuss. And they brighten up and look, and we pause again, and we have some fun with it. But the kids get it. I mean, they really do get it.
Yes. And back to the seriousness of the nature of what you're doing, what would happen if all of a sudden this really became mandated? To eliminate the waste in using this method, couldn't the government issue contracts all over? Wouldn't that be like the right thing to do? Which is to, you want to talk about the protection of the United States of America and the and really homeland defense?
It might be some fun for some of your listeners, and this is going to be terribly pompous, but they might be able to say a few years from now, hey, I remember listening to a program wherein what looked like terribly new and innovative has now become the conventional wisdom. It will become the conventional wisdom. It'll be, another plasma converter, what's new? That's when the success occurs, when that's integrated into our society as part of how we keep ourselves safe. Lights on the street, policemen, hand railings, a whole world of things we take so much for granted. And governments now, it's interesting that you mention that because I just came back from a presentation in Rome where in Italy they're starting to say that we're going to adopt this technology as a primary process for our nation. There are a lot of peoples around the world starting to think that way. So, and now we even have New York City. Now, we don't say that New York City is going to be contracting with StarTech Environmental. But with regard to the adoption of the thinking and the technology and the awareness that, yes, something could be done, I'm changing subjects. When I talked to Carol Browner a few years ago, she was a great EPA administrator in back, 8 or 9 years, and I said that, Ms. Browner, we would be happy if you adjusted your air quality standards to be more stringent. And she looked at me cynically. Of course, I wanted to tilt the table in my direction to. But she said, we can't criminalize everyone. The point being here, though, is that the technology will allow us to do that. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a little time. So what we find as acceptable now may be abhorrent to us. It might look quaint and primitive 10 years from now. That's going on right now.
Interesting. You know, you would think that what you have produced, I would think, and I would imagine that audiences would think, that the need for it is so desperate. And I think the only reason why it doesn't become an immediate systemic imperative is that the elimination of waste occurs outside of public perception. It's a behind-the-scenes side effort. Yeah. Unless you're in the business of it, it's not occurring. It's not in consciousness, and therefore, it's not in the thinking every day. It's not in the public awareness. It's not in the papers. Yes, if you get environmental news that tracks it, watches it, pays attention to it, great. If you don't, then it's not occurring. And what is not in consciousness for you and I as citizens is not necessarily occurring, even if it is. So it's sneaky. It's a phenomenon that is occurring, and it's outside of public perception as citizens. That's part of what takes so long to get it adopted into mainstream. But the other part is, as I was thinking about this, is that it really should be part of, you want to talk about homeland security? If this administration really wants to bring in the total seriousness, you cannot have this solution at a systemic level live outside, be residenced outside, put infringed to an environmental thing. It must be adopted as an integral part of homeland security. One would think that this must be ushered in to, whether it's this administration, whether it's the Democratic or Republican, it doesn't matter. Whatever is the leadership administration at the time, it has to be brought in centrally and made part of and built into law, actually, if this is to go on to cover the dangerous nature of what's already out there. StarTech is going to catch a lot of what's occurring and start to be built into processes. And yet at the same time, it is a race against time, is it not?
It is. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that you mentioned Homeland Security. We put forth a white paper to Tom Ridge when he was just probably didn't even have his file straightened out at home at Homeland. So you're perhaps too new. A thing called Project Backstop, and Backstop would work the following way. We operate on the assumption that there will be an event with either chemical or biological weapons, and it could very well be in a New York subway or something of that sort, where a little bit, a little dabble do you. I know that's cynical as hell, but in that situation, if there is such a material, as happened in Japan with sarin, if there is such a material in such a place, what one has to do, that's lethal material. What one has to do is take the tool and the skills to the spot and just completely destroy it there or right in that 50 yards of where it is in that locality, as compared to getting some firemen or policemen in spacesuits to gather it up and take it, put it someplace and take it someplace, all of which is undetermined. But for example, if it was going to be gathered up in New York City, New York City being a high-profile target, and taken off to, I don't know, Maryland or Virginia, that material would be moving again across state lines through everyone's community. And every step of the way, there'd have to be an emergency action plan if what happens if the bus hits the truck, et cetera, et cetera. It's incredible. It's
by the grace of God that something horrific hasn't unfolded as of yet.
Well, you know what? It's so easy to happen. It's going to happen. I mean, it can even be a little bit of anthrax, and I'm not gloom and doom, but by golly, there's a lot of people after us, Kim, and so something's going to happen, and there'll be all a bunch of chaos and programs initiated, and we essentially said to the administration, look, go get a system. Have the fire truck. Have one fire truck. In a manner of speaking, a mobile plasma converter system. Have one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast.
That would be fabulous.
It's cheap and so smart. I mean, whomever is head of Homeland Security, if someone said, well, what are you doing for us? Well, I can point to this tool. And now I'm going to be terribly cynical. Even if the person, the head of it, wasn't sure if it would work or not. Now, this is really cynical. He ought to have it just to be able to say he's doing something positive along, really proactive as compared to sending out leaflets or teaching the police how to put gas masks on, et cetera, all of which is important.
But you have systems actually up and working, so
yes.
They wouldn't need to go through that exercise of futility or to take that mentality point of view, because you already have demonstration capability. This is not at a concept level. These are built, these are working, these are going. What if your demand exceeds your supply in terms of manufacturing? And we only have a few minutes left. I always ask the hardest questions at the end, but heck, I can't help myself. What happens? There's a wonderful gentleman who told me all about your company named Lonnie Maxfield. And Lonnie's a brilliant guy and has his own global systemic solution and is really inspired my learning about your company and your contribution. We want to thank Lonnie Maxfield today. And so what happens if the demand exceeds the supply?
Well, we have anticipated that. People would say that's a good problem. Well, it's not really. Not being fulfilled supply is harmful. But we do have relationships with some Fortune 500 companies who would be delighted to partner with us and co-manufacture.
So if all of a sudden a huge boom happens, the chain reaction happens in the positive way, then you're ready to rock and roll.
Yes, we'll outsource, yes.
Very good. Okay, please give your web address.
Okay, the web is www.StarTech, and it's StarTech, one word, StarTech.net. And so you can see a lot about us there. anyone who wants to talk to me about anything at all, my private email is JFL, Joseph F. Longo, JFL at StarTech.net, one word, S-T-A-R-T-E-C-H. We're a public company. You can see a lot of us in public filings, a lot about us. Our symbol is S-T-H-K. So there's a lot of information on us and about. So, and again, when in doubt, or call Kim. She'll get to us.
With the lightning rod. Joe, I want to thank you for being on the show. The honor was mine. I want to invite you back, and I'm going to have some people from around the world on. We'll do a 4-to-5-person conversation and really get things rocking and rolling. I also want to invite you to my television show. I also produce this show for television in Los Angeles. Hopefully it will be around the world as well. And thank you again for being here. For audiences listening, both in Colorado and around the world, you have no idea how much I appreciate your presence and your listening and your participation. I know you're there. We care about you. And if you want to know more about segments coming up or it's rainmaking time, go to www.itsrainmakingtime.com. I also have a company called The Rainmaking Company, and I provide marketing and communication services, and obviously you can tell, strategic services for making things happen in the world. I consider myself a global systems architect and delivery agent. God bless you, and goodbye.